History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories there that should not go untold. And they don't have to, if we'll just take a little time and ask a few questions, and maybe most importantly, be patient enough to listen to what comes back our way from some of our more experienced neighbors. We're going to come out ahead. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we learn a lot, we're educated, we're entertained, and so often we are inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. I'm in Clovis, California today with 95-year-old, soon-to-be 96-year-old Al Marcus, or Albert as it says on his birth certificate, second oldest of four kids. And tell me where you were born.
Hazel Park, Michigan.
Outside of Detroit.
Yeah, it's about 15 miles from Detroit. It's just a small town.
What do you remember about your childhood then?
I remember when my brother was born, Harry Marcus. He was born at the house, right home, like all of us were. And then I heard this noise, baby crying. My mother said, well, the doctor brought the baby in the back.
How about that?
Yeah, she told me so. I believed it. I don't know. I was just a kid, 9 years old, so...
The doctor just delivered the baby to your door?
Yeah, he brought him in the back. Uh-huh. And I believed it. I didn't know. In fact, I told this to a kid, and he laughed at me. He thought I didn't know. He knew more about it than I did. But that's what my mother told me. When I asked her, where's that baby crying? She said, well, the doctor brought the baby in the back.
Mm-hmm.
I was at the house when the doctor came, and my brother was born at home. All of us were born at home except my sister. She was born in the hospital.
Different times back then.
Yeah.
So you are growing up during the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something you were aware of at the time? Did you know that times were tough or not really?
No, I really didn't, except when things got bad. My dad lost his job.
Mm. What was he doing?
He was the head manager of a grocery, a small grocery store. The grocery store was probably about as big as this building.
Mm-hmm.
And he put the stuff in the bag for the people. They never went and picked it up themselves. The manager always put the stuff in the bag, and that's the way they did in those days. The Smith's store is what it's called.
Smith's, yeah. They still have a few of those around.
Yeah, it was in Michigan, Hazel Park. It wasn't very far from where we lived, probably about 4 or 5 blocks, something like that. Then he got laid off, and so he came over here, got a ride in California with a bunch of men. After, I guess, maybe a few months, he sent for us. We came on the train, and all the rest of us did. My grandmother, my mother, and my sister, me and my baby brother, mm-hmm. all of us, all the kids, came on the Santa Fe train. We got off right in the Santa Fe train station. Old locomotive, I remember.
Were your parents from Michigan originally, or?
No. Just as a kid, my mother was from Turkey and Egypt, and mm-hmm. my dad was from Syria and Egypt. They all came to the United States. My dad came here, I think, around 1897.
Mm-hmm.
My mother came in 1918. They all went to Egypt because where they were, it was dangerous, so then they came here.
So I just want to make sure I understand it all. Your father was here in the late 1890s.
Yeah.
Your mother came in 1918.
That's right.
So was your mother fleeing the Armenian genocide?
Yeah. She went to Egypt with her family. My grandmother asked my dad, do you want to get married? She sent for my mother from Egypt. She came to Boston, Massachusetts, and they got married there when they met. First time they met, they got married.
It was a marriage arranged by their parents?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the way it was.
Well, and you wouldn't be here if it didn't work
yeah,
out that
right.
way.
That's right.
Is that something you were aware of as a kid, that your parents had come here because of what America represented?
No, not until later on when I was older. Mm-hmm. I found out that when I was in Fresno, California, when I was older to learn.
And there are a lot of other people here who had similar family backgrounds.
Yeah, they did the same thing, a lot of people. All my dad's brothers, they all came here. The families came here from there, too. My mother's family didn't come here then, but my dad's family, they all came here.
So how old were you when your dad said, hey, why don't you guys come join me here in California?
9 years old.
What was that journey like?
I kind of thought it was fun. I was looking out the train. See, going through, I could see Indians on the side.
Really?
Yeah, it's something interesting.
Uh-huh.
as in 1934. Then we come to Fresno, and we stayed with some relatives, and then after that, my dad got this house on Mono and Angus. It's an old beat-up house, but it's good. It had 22 doors to it.
What is a boy brand new to the middle of California in the 1930s, what does he envision for his life? Did you have some hopes and dreams?
No, I don't know. I went to Emerson Grammar School when I came to Fresno. I wasn't doing very good. The teacher stayed over after school, kept me to help me. I don't even remember her name, but she really cared to help me because I wasn't doing very good. But she really helped me to learn my lessons. She stayed after school to do that, too. She didn't have to do that. I wish I could thank her because I remember what she did. Because a lot of people don't go to that trouble helping a kid that's having a problem with his school.
What was the big challenge for you?
Reading and how to, my English, I didn't know much as bad about that.
Were your parents speaking English in the home?
No, in Armenian.
So your parents spoke Armenian at home.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, for you in the 1930s, be like some of the kids who are showing up in Fresno now, who Spanish is their first language.
That's right.
And they have to learn English.
Yeah, I knew how to speak Armenian, but I'm really forgetting it now because I don't speak it to anybody.
But this teacher was patient enough to work with you.
I wish I could thank her because she really helped me. I was doing real bad until she took the trouble, keep me after school. That was mainly what was read and write.
I have heard some stories from Armenian American veterans that I've spoken to that in the 20s and the 30s, maybe even the 40s, that, you know, at times you could be discriminated against because you're Armenian.
That.
What do you remember about that?
I remember walking, when we moved to this house on Mono and Angus Court, my parents just bought this house. The first day I was going to school, I was 9 years old now, walking down the street, this woman come out the door. I never seen. She said, "You dirty Armenian." Could you imagine that? I was just a child, 9 years old. Mm-hmm. She said that to me. I never forgot it. She was probably about 20, 25 years of age, and she lived next door. Here she said that to a child. I was a nine. "You dirty Armenian." She never seen me before, but what made her think I was... But that's what she said. I never forgotten. Yeah. I would never want to do that to anybody myself. So when I see someone mistreating, especially black people, I feel bad for them. They're mistreated pretty bad, some of them are. Abraham Lincoln's my favorite president because he was the one, he gave his life for freeing the slaves, you know.
Yeah. And what kinds of things were you up to as a kid? Did you have to do some work anywhere, or were you out playing games or getting into trouble?
Well, as I grew up in Fresno, I got a bicycle. I made a trailer for it, go on the bike. Drove around town. I messed around. I built a little house in the backyard. It was probably about this size right here, from here on that size of a house.
Maybe 8x8 or something?
Something like that. I built the whole thing by myself.
What'd you build it out of?
Wood.
Just wood you found somewhere?
Yeah, what I did, they were tearing a building down. I went and got this lumber.
Yeah.
And I built it. I'm probably about 16 years of age, something like that then.
All right. Where'd you go to high school?
Went to Fresno Tech. It's not even there anymore. They tore it down, but I went there. And then when the war comes, I joined the Navy because they were taking me in the Army. And I didn't want to go in the Army, so I joined the Navy right away so I wouldn't be drafted in the Army.
Well, tell me what you remember about that day, because it seems like everybody I talk to remembers something about December 7th, 1941.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just, I didn't think much of it. All I know is they were drafting the men, so I didn't want to go in the Army. Mm-hmm. So I went, and my dad had to sign for me to go in the Navy, so went down to the post office here in Fresno. They give you a light examination there. Then from there, they put us on the train, Southern Pacific passenger train, going to San Francisco. Went to San Francisco post office there. They give you a little examination there, too. And then they put us on the train again, going to Farragut, Idaho. So I went to Farragut, Idaho. That was their new base. And I went there and was there for about maybe 3 months. And then from there, they shipped us back to San Francisco. On Treasure Island, we were put there, a bunch of guys were. And then from there, we waited till the ship was being built in Alameda. When it was built, then they put us aboard ship, and then we went out to San Diego area as a crew, shakedown crew. And then we came back, and then we went out to Pearl Harbor. From there, we went to Macon Island, attacked the island there, and took it over from the Japanese.
Well, and why don't you tell us about your ship? What kind of ship was it?
It was a transport, attack transport is what it's called.
An APA.
APA, that's right. And that's where we carried troops on there, Army or either Marines. Then, like I said, we went to Macon Island first of all. I remember they brought a Japanese prisoner aboard ship. He tried to commit suicide. He was scared. He was laying in bed. They had him in this room. he got the sheet, made a rope out of the sheet, trying to choke himself to death. And the guard heard him, so he went over and rescued him. And then we went back to Pearl Harbor. They put him in a prisoner of war camp there, and that was it. I don't even know what happened to the guy after that.
So let's, for people who aren't familiar, let's talk about your ship and what its purpose was. So an APA is designed to deliver troops to shore. You have a bunch of boats on the ship that take them into shore and then evacuate casualties. Mm-hmm. And you also have some guns on your ship that you may be shelling the shoreline.
Yeah, we had some guns there. We had some 5-inch guns, some 40-millimeter guns.
And what was your duty on the ship?
First of all, I was on the deck force, just regular sailor. And I asked this guy ahead of me, or he was a bosun's mate. I says, hey, could I get in the radar? He made me get, first of all, he gave me a job going to the captain of the ship, walking around with him, see. I was kind of shy. I was scared to do that there. But anyway, he wouldn't help me out, this guy. It was first class petty officer. So I asked this officer, I kept seeing him, hey, could I get in the radar division? So he's the one got me in. He went over this guy's first class petty officer's head, and he got me in the radar division. So it was on the radar then, which was better for me, too.
Why was that better?
Well, it was a nice job. The other was really, like I said, you get on these boats and you attack the shore. Here I was sitting in a nice place, and we'd run the radar. We could see the ships by the enemy, you know. On radar, you could see the airplanes by the radar, too.
And this was brand new technology then.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was all new. I think the British is the one who started this year. And we got from them, and it was really good.
But your motivation was, maybe this is a safer job?
No, it wasn't that. It's just that I just thought it would be a nicer thing. I didn't even think about whether it's safe or not, but it really is. When you're on these boats going and hitting the enemy, that is dangerous. But to me, I didn't even know, give that a thought.
How would you describe your camaraderie with the rest of the sailors on that ship?
Guys in the radar department, I got to know them. That's all we did. I remember some of them. I remember one guy trying to help me out, and it was a long time ago. I remember this guy, he was a college graduate, and I remember he was trying to help me out because I was just a kid. His name was Finnegan, I remember him. And other guys just like me, too, just, I don't know.
Well, what can you tell us about that work in the radar division? What did you have to look at? How did it work? How would you know what was going on?
Yeah. We looked at this radar equipment. You look at it. It had it like a screen, like a TV screen, like. You could see the enemy ships from a distance, and you could see the aircraft, too. We had two different radars. One of them was for aircraft. You can see up in the air. You can't see the airplane, but you see what shows. And then the other one was for ships. It'd pick up ship maybe 15 miles away, and that's all it was. It was his job, and it was a good job, too.
I imagine there were times where what you saw on that screen made an impression on you, though.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because I'd never seen like that anything before. I learned by being with these other radar guys. All these other guys, same thing just about.
And when you see on this radar screen, there are ships approaching or in the distance or there are planes approaching, there's nothing on that radar display that tells you they're friend or foe.
No,
there's
nothing like that at all. Just all we know is we could see ships. We didn't know who they were, but eventually you'd find out whether they're friendly or not. But there was no problem. It was really pretty safe.
And what would you do with that information? What did you have to do with what you were bringing in from that screen?
We'd have to tell the officers that was in charge of the ship. It was really nothing to it. The captain would come and look and see what we're doing. I remember he asked me one time with this ship, and I said, well, that's one of the ships that was reported by one of the other ships, because I didn't know, but it's just one of those things. We're all new at this ship. Everybody's new aboard ship, and we're just all learning.
But the whole purpose of it is hopefully to prevent or intercept an attack by the enemy.
That's right. It was to see the enemy.
So that's a lot of responsibility that comes with that.
Yeah, it was.
If you miss something, it could cost guys their lives.
Yeah, we'd be in trouble, too, if we miss something.
And where did you sleep aboard that ship?
We all had bunks. Usually it was down below, and there's about three guys on top of each other on the bunks. I remember I slept on the bottom one. If we ever got hit by a torpedo, we were through. We'd be dead. But nothing like that happened. The ship would go zigzag, preventing any of that stuff.
To avoid the submarines?
Yeah. We were, like you said, most of us were just, same as me, they were just young guys. It was safe, but I didn't know it could have been dangerous.
Well, I'm sure we're going to hear about some situations that the rest of us might not describe as safe. But I'm curious, for you, being a teenager, mm-hmm. before you were assigned mm-hmm. to the inaugural crew of mm-hmm. the USS mm-hmm. Pierce, had you ever been on a ship before?
Never had. I never even knew what a ship was. I liked it. It was kind of it was a good job. When the ship's underway, I'd look over the side and watch as the ship's going. You see some porpoise sometime. But going along with the ship seemed like they seemed to be following us. I was just kidding, you know.
So I don't ask this to be melodramatic, just to be real, because I'm imagining mm-hmm. if an 18-year-old or 17-year-old is heading overseas today in a global war, mm-hmm. what would they be thinking? Was there any thought in your mind that I might not make it back to see my family again?
No, I never thought that.
Never thought that.
I never did. It just seemed like everything was safe, but then we could have gotten killed.
And we'll hear some examples of situations where that certainly could have happened when we come back. 95-year-old Albert Marcus is our guest today. He'll turn 96 on Valentine's Day. Find photos of him then and now at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook. And we'll be right back after this. When life throws you curveballs, you have to be adaptable, or at least have a good pinch hitter on the bench who knows how to handle a curve. When it comes to your business, Provident Payments is the best teammate you could ever have. Perhaps it helps that many of the leaders for one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America are former ballplayers. Contactless payments, online ordering, point of sale, you name it, Provident Payments knows it. Now, you could get some of these services from one of the big banking companies, but you're never going to get the kind of personalized service that Provident Payments delivers every day. 24/7 solution-based tech support. When your ability to process payments goes haywire in any way, time is money. So would you rather wait on hold for who knows how long, or would you like to have a direct line you can call for immediate help? That's where a good teammate comes in. Learn more about bringing Provident Payments onto your team at providentpayments.com. They really are one of the fastest growing payment consultants in America. That website again, providentpayments.com.